think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down!
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. Live from the Hyatt Regency Hotel in the Galleria, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, live at the Hyatt Regency in the Galleria. 713-780-ESPN is your number. 713-780-3776. You'll need that because we're going to have a giveaway in a minute. You can also hit us up on the Blitz Facebook page. Find the Blitz. Click like. You're good to go. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R, at A-J is the real, at Jon Snow with a zero, not an O, at Degenerates 975. You can also text the show, 713-780-3776. You missed the first hour. Pretty sportsy. So, Brian Ching is in the house. And if you wish to meet Brian, he's here. He's got
Where is he?
Stuff. He's right here with his back to you.
Okay.
He still looks like he can play, too. So, you know what? In fact, if we have a media soccer thing, he's my number one pick.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Over Glenn?
I would take him over Glenn Davis.
Okay.
A little more successful.
I'm going to be loyal to Glenn.
I already like my team a little better than yours.
Okay.
But that's okay.
I'm gonna play goalie.
I'm going to coach. I'm going to manage.
No, you have to play.
Yeah. You see me running around out there? Ugh. 346 says, I'm drunk with two pitchers and seven tall mixed drinks.
Hey, good for you.
But need to sober up by 8 p.m. Walking 6 miles right now. Will that do it? You know what? Just go swallow a bottle of Thrive. That'll get you there. Jesse says, I haven't watched poker in a while, but the prize money has come down a lot in the main event since the poker craze in the 2000s. Actually, this was the second biggest field since the year I played.
Oh, really?
When there were over 10,000 in 2006. Almost 8,000 people. Now, the payouts aren't as high because they pay out more players now.
Oh, okay.
They've spread it out a little bit, so that's why that's come down. But, yeah, I was surprised to find out second biggest.
I think Matt Dean was the last year that everybody at the table, at the final table, wasn't an automatic millionaire.
I don't know if that's entirely true. I think there have been a couple years since where.
Okay, I thought they made that, like, that was the deal after his year.
I don't remember the
November 9 all made the money.
You know, because I think there were some of those guys that you were guaranteed, like, 900 grand.
Okay, let me ask you this. Well, Matt finished, he got, what, 675? And he finished
seventh? Yeah, he finished seventh, yeah. But, I mean, he was right after Moneymaker and the explosion.
Yeah, Greg Raymer was the guy who won it the first year after Moneymaker, right?
Right, and, yeah, that was his table.
So
when he ran into David Williams' pocket aces.
Yep. Matt Dean's not folding kings for sure. He would have gone right with that.
Matt would have shoved over the initial raise.
If Ace Jack's the nuts, he would have definitely gone with
those
kings.
When the guy had raised to 1.5, knowing Matt, he would have gone all in with the kings right then and there.
My buddy Randy and I were talking, and he said that he's bummed that they don't do it live in November. And my question to you would it be better for them to do it live in November again? And that's better for the audience.
I like it like this. And they are doing it live, but with a 30-minute delay.
For the players, it feels like it's too much to ask somebody to take all this momentum you've been playing with and now take 4 months off.
Yeah, see, I don't like that.
I wouldn't like it either.
I like it the way it is now, where if you made the final table last night, then you're playing tonight.
Okay.
And
so it is going to be shown live.
Yeah.
See, unfortunately,
30-minute delay.
Yeah, 30-minute delay is enough that somebody's going to ruin it on Twitter for you.
Yeah.
Because they have a live audience.
But if you're on Twitter, which I haven't been while this has been going on. But the thing that I find useful about that is if you're a player, you've got somebody watching, and they're texting you, like a hand you lost, what the guy had. So that's – and they've been doing that. Players have been kind of keeping – because like Joe Catta, who won who's the only one left who's won the tournament.
He's still in?
Yeah, he pulled off
a
sick bluff 2 nights ago. And, yeah, that's the thing. When people see that, and I saw stories about it, it's about, oh, he pulled off this ridiculous bluff. But if you'd watch that table all night, it was a perfect bluff because You know, the guy had top pair, and that was it, weak kicker. And Kata had played so tight the entire time. You just, when you saw it, there's like, oh, there's no way he's going to risk all his chips.
Where's he at in chip stack?
He's down about 21 million, I think.
So he's like bottom three.
I've actually got him here because I wrote about him this morning.
Can you imagine?
He's sixth in chips with 23 million.
Okay.
So Mannion has 112, Dyer has 109. And then the drop-off is to Tony Miles at 42.
Dyer's the Houston guy, right?
Yeah. Johnson, 37. Alex Linsky, 25. Kata, 23. Aram Zobian, 18. And Artem Medvedev is at 15. And Labatt, the guy who called with the Kings, has 8 million.
Okay. Let me throw this out, this hot take out.
Okay.
If Joe Kata were to win again twice in 10 years, and I'm not talking about like in the pre-boom days when, you know, people could win multiple main events and it wasn't, like, unheard of because there's, like, a couple hundred people in the tournament.
And there were only, like, 15 guys who were really good.
Right.
So.
That would be one of the greatest accomplishments in gambling history.
Oh, I agree. To win this thing twice in 10 years.
Like, how? I mean.
And he's played amazing, man. It's been fun to
watch. How many players were in the tournament this year?
Almost 8,000. I think it was, like, 7,700.
Okay.
And, yeah, to play as well as he did, pretty darn incredible. I'd say
there were 6,500 when he played the first time.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible if he were to win it twice.
I remember he was the guy, his final opponent was that Darvin Moon, who was like one of the worst players ever.
And had the big chip lead. And
he just was such a luck box, though. Yeah. I mean, he was like an unstoppable luck box.
Yeah. And I would agree with that. That would be one of the more impressive performances in gambling history to be able to pull it off twice. But
and the first time he did it, he was what? I mean, he was like 22?
He was the youngest champion. So I think I think he's 30 now, 29, somewhere in there.
He won it at 21.
Okay, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he's 30 now.
That's the thing. I mean, I know. Oh, and by the way, I bet some credit to Phil Hellmuth for winning another bracelet.
Dude, I got to be honest with you. I haven't watched any of the World Series of Poker. Now that I know he's in it, I'm interested. I might watch some of that tonight.
See, I've been watching the entire time, and I've really just appreciated how well these guys have played. And I've learned a lot, not just from them, but from the commentators. And I'm really interested in all of them because of the way all of them have played. But him being in there is it adds to it.
Yeah, it makes it interesting to me.
And then last night, your boy Phil Hellmuth won his 15th bracelet.
Nice.
Won a $5,000 turbo tournament. And, after all the meltdown stuff we talked about, he apologized for all that. And then he comes out in 15 bracelets, 5 more than anybody else.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And this was after he was called a washed-up has-been.
Well, let's answer this then to you. What's more impressive, having 15 bracelets or having two and they're both main events from, you know, within 10 years post-poker boom? That's a tough call, isn't it?
It is a tough call because
some of these games, some of these bracelets, Helmuth's one, like there's been less than 100 players in it.
Some of his early ones, yeah. But he's also won them in games other than Hold'em.
Yeah, he plays like Raz and these weirdo games.
And I think that's impressive. So that's a good question. I honestly don't know how to answer that. My gut tells me the 15 bracelets, but. And one of them is a main event, but it was a long time ago. He hasn't won it in the modern era, and I think that's, to me, anyone who's won it after 2003, it's more impressive than anybody who won before that.
Well, let's also point out that Joe Kata won a bracelet in 2014.
Yeah, he's got four.
And he won a bracelet this year.
Yeah, so he's got three bracelets now.
Yeah.
And if you add a fourth.
This is his second final table of the year.
It's pretty good. So Hellmuth also got pretty deep in another event earlier that he got close in. So that's the thing, though. He almost always goes deep in tournaments.
Yeah, that's an impressive. I mean, obviously, 15 bracelets is unreal, but I just can't get past that this dude could possibly win. And obviously, he hasn't even done it yet. So maybe I'm making a big deal of it.
And again, he's up against it because that's.
But honestly, to make the final table twice post poker boom is like pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah,
like if Matt Dean went back and made another final table, I'd be like, my God, that's even if he didn't win either one, he just finished seventh twice.
Yeah,
that's an incredible accomplishment.
Matt Dean's a guy who could do that.
Matt
could roll out of bed tomorrow
because
and
they're
go
guys,
deep in a tournament.
They're guys who like, I can't imagine that Darvin Moon making another final table.
No.
Like he's
Jamie
just,
Gold.
Yeah. Like those guys aren't good enough players. But if you can make a final table twice in like 6,000 to 8,000 people fields,
yeah.
Like I mean that's unbelievable.
And you think think about the truly great players who aren't making final tables, including Helmuth in the main event, and Negreanu who's been close, I know, and I think Ivy did make one, but they're not consistently getting there. I mean, that's hard work.
Yep.
Taylor says, how do you guys think you would fare in the World Series of Poker? You guys seem like good players. I got to the end of day one. That's how I fared.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
I don't know that I have the patience to do this anymore. I don't even I had an opportunity to play in one of these two-day things, and I just don't. Right now, it's too much like work for me. And
I like when there's tournaments with 100 people in them.
Yeah.
That's what I like.
Well I can do it in one day.
Yeah, it might take 6-7 hours.
And I'm okay with that.
But, yeah, but at the end of the night, I'm done. Because if you have to go to bed and then wake up and play the next day, like, it's almost impossible to sleep.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a stressful thing.
And this turns into a week-long thing if you're going deep in it. And you never go into a tournament not thinking you're going to go deep. That's just you're always thinking you're going to last for a while. So, I at some point, like, I don't know that I'll play the main. I know I always talk about, you know, next – I might go play that seniors event next year. I thought about doing that this year. It's like $1,000 buy-in. But I don't really want to do anything that's going to be more than a two-day tournament. It's just, you know, I don't have the patience for it anymore. And if you're not patient, you're just going to donk off chips.
Yeah.
All right. I think we need to take a break.
Okay.
Because my food's sitting here.
Okay.
Do we have music?
Where'd you go to the bar and order that?
Yeah, I went to the bar and ordered that.
Oh, look at you.
Got me some sliders.
I guess that's what I need to do.
Probably right. A good idea.
Let me tell you guys about my computer career first. I'm going to tell you about Duran, who last year was a kitchen cook, and he wanted a better life for himself. So he went to my computer career, and he just last month, we're talking about less than a year later, he started his IT career, making 50% more money doing something that he loves. That could be you. You don't love what you do, go to mycomputercareer.edu and take a free career evaluation today. Could start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. If you don't have computer experience or training, they don't care. Helping people start an IT career is what they do. You attend classes on campus or live online just 2 or 3 times a week. You're going to get everything you need to start your new career. And it's more than just a school. They help you get into the industry because they work with hundreds of employers that hire their students. They're nationally accredited. Financial aid's available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon. Go take that free career evaluation now. MyComputerCareer.edu. It's not rocket science. It's MyComputerCareer. MyComputerCareer.edu.
Listen to your favorite ESPN 97.5 show on the go with the ESPN 97.5 app for iOS or Android. Presented by Saltgrass Steakhouse. Now back to the Blitz with Fred and AJ.
And we are back on the Blitz. Live here at the Hyatt Regency in the Galleria. Come on out. Ray Ray's here. You know it's a party when Ray Ray shows up. Brian Ching is here. You get a chance to meet him. He'll be on with us next segment, hopefully. And we'll talk a little soccer with him. We have several questions for
him.
Should be interesting. Like, would he take himself over Glenn Davis?
Glenn's old.
Well, Glenn's had like 12 surgeries in the last year, too.
He's an old-ass man.
I mean, he looks the part.
I think Brian's probably still feeling like he's got something.
Yeah, well, we can get him on now. Heck.
I'm open to that.
Yeah.
Can you set this up?
Yeah, Ninja actually has to work for a second. But
don't exhaust yourself.
What's up, fellas?
How's it going, man?
Just heard you talking smack over here, so I have to, you know, hip. Glenn has a broken hip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an old man injury.
So
I mean, right? That's definitely an old man.
I think
injury.
I can take him.
Yeah.
plus the 15 years that he has on me, I think I got it.
How do you still go and kick a ball around anymore, or are you done with that now?
So I went out with a company, like the Dynamo front office team in a league once, and we ended up losing like 8 or 9-0 because this other team was pretty good, and I guess I'm old. I don't know. But I couldn't make that much of a difference. And I just, like, in the beginning, I was like, okay, this is fun. I'm having a good time kicking the ball around. And then, like, 3-0 goes by, and I'm like, I started to get a little angry, you know? And
oh, so no,
I was
yeah,
like,
you don't
I started to
get
really
skin.
Angry, you yeah. know? And then by the end of it, I almost got into a fight with one of the guys because, anyway, long story short. But, but I was like, after that, I was like, I don't think I'm going to play recreational anymore. I actually just go. I have a buddy who has a turf field in his backyard, thankfully. So it's like a 5v5, a little bit smaller game. And so I go and play that, and that's just controlled. You know the guy.
Right.
The guy wanted to fight you. Did you show up pictures of your MLS cup?
There's nobody watching you and being like, oh, man, you guys remember when Brian Ching didn't lose 9-0?
So, no, it was the funny thing was like, well, this is why. So, anyways, it's like 8-0, right? The game's almost over. I'm kind of, at this point, I'm trying to defend, so we don't get scored on as many times. And so I still like push the guy just a little bit, you know, and he kicks the ball wide. And then he's like screaming for a penalty kick. I mean, it's like the 90th minute. They're up 8-0. And I was like, dude, are you serious? Like, you know, and then he started chatting back to me. And I was like, oh, okay, don't want to be doing this
anymore.
What a
just telling me, you take your penalty kick. I'm going to keep my MLS cups I want. So.
Dude, I felt bad because I did go. I was like, dude, this is like Sunday League. Come on.
what's your association now with the Dynamo? Do you still work for the team?
Yeah, so last year I got away from being the general manager of Dash and became more of an ambassador. But we changed our coach, and she was a foreign coach coming into our league. So I jumped back into kind of helping her kind of navigate the different rules that our league has and whatnot. So I've been helping out on the women's side on that. I'm doing that. And then just kind of ambassador stuff. I'm on the board for Dynamo Charities as well. So appearances, scheduling events with older alumni, pulling together kind of like a professional soccer player group of guys that kind of help be ambassadors for the team and whatnot. So.
Well, I don't. The reason I ask is I don't know how honest you can be when I ask you this question, but 12 years into it, you know, the Dynamo have been around now 12 years. Do you feel like the Dynamo are they where you'd hoped they would be at year 12? Like, is Houston as an MLS city, the Dynamo as a franchise, are they where you'd hoped they would be back then?
You always want more, right? I mean, I've always wanted better for the team and more for the team. And I think, you know, we struggled. So we went through a really good spell. I mean, we were the first 10 years of our existence. We made the playoffs 8 or 9 times. We were in the conference finals 6 times, MLS Cup final 4 times. You know, and then we went through a period where we really struggled. You know, I think we were like last place in the league for about 3 years. And then kind of last year, got a coach and he really turned things around. But as far as like, you know, attendance standpoint, you kind of want to see more, you know, but you understand it as what we went through, a rough stretch. Last year we made the playoffs again. I think we have one of the most exciting teams, to be honest. I mean, we score goals. The guys that we have on the field are scoring goals this year. I'm excited for them. I think they're underachieving a little bit. I think they're playing well. They're just not getting results. Like certain games, they'll be up and then get tied in the last minute or two, but I'm really excited. They're young guys too, so there's a lot to be excited for, you know, and I'm a little disappointed that, you know, but I think the World Cup has kind of taken away from some of the attendance that we've had recently, but, you know, I think it'll pick up near here at the end of the season because the team's good enough, and they score a lot of goals, to be honest.
How long do you think it'll take for MLS to catch up with, you know, some of the bigger European leagues as far as prestige and as far as the quality of player and things like that, and as far as the money? Like, how far off do you think MLS is from doing that?
Well, you look at our growth from 96 when we started till now. I mean, it's exponentially bigger than any league that's ever, you know, in their first 20 years grown, you know. And I think that in the next 10 years, we're going to have another World Cup in 2026 here, and I think that's going to be another launching board for soccer. I mean, you look at some of the expansion teams that are coming in, and they're filling up stadiums. I mean, Atlanta, you know, they're getting 60,000, 50,000 people a game. Seattle, 40,000 people a game. So, I mean, the excitement's there, you know, and it's building. I mean, soccer's the world's game, but, you know, I think the longer the MLS is around, the more it's going to build. I say, look, in 10 years, I think the soccer landscape is going to be completely different from what it is today, and a lot more higher profile. And I think when as those things slowly happen, you'll see the rise in the level of play. You'll see the rise in the level of excitement. And, you know, a lot of the European guys, they want to come over here and play in the U.S. You know, there's this allure of being in the U.S. and playing here. And so you start seeing more and more. I think one of the biggest things and the hardest things that's going to be to compete against a lot of the European leagues is what they have, the Champions League. I don't know if you guys are aware of that, but that's a huge draw. That's pretty much the best of the best right now, because obviously it encompasses all the top leagues around the world. And so to win that tournament is a huge prestige. And so a lot of big-time players will want to stick around in Europe for that. So that's something that it's going to be tough to compete with going forward. But, you know, I still think soccer has a long way to run here in the country.
So is it a good thing or a bad thing when guys who are kind of at the end of their career, like Wayne Rooney coming over now, is that good for the league? Or I've also seen some criticism of that.
You know, it's good for the league if it's the right guys. You know, I thought David Beckham came here. He was older, but he still had a lot of juice left in the tank, and ended up winning a couple championships. Depends on the guy, right? I mean, I think Zlatan's coming over here. He still could be playing in Europe at some of the top teams in the world, but he's coming over here and he's doing well. It's those guys that come over here and think it's going to be a vacation, you know, that they're going to struggle and make things look bad. But when they actually come over with the right attitude, I mean, David Villa, he got called into the national team before the World Cup, one of the best players in NYCFC, one of the best players ever to play the game too. So, yeah, I think that's how it happens, you know. And then you'll slowly start seeing these guys get younger and younger as they come over, or you see some of the young talent coming up out of South America now, Central America. I think we've got some tremendous players coming out of there. You know, we have a few guys on our team. You know, the Albert Elis, guy who's our leading goal scorer, one of our leading goal scorers, under the age of 24, I think he is. He's 22, 23. Monotas, another guy on our team who's tied for leading goals. He's probably about 20, 21. So you're starting to see some really good, young, talented players come up and develop in our league. And, you know, I think for a while you'll probably see some guys still getting sold off and going to Europe. But, I think 10 years is going to be a completely different scene.
Obviously, disappointment for the U.S. not making the World Cup, and I know you've been asked this a lot, but what needs to change? I mean, that was that the kind of wake-up call that maybe U.S. soccer needed to kind of revamp things, or were they on the right path and this was just a stumbling block?
Yeah, I definitely feel that there's disaster, catastrophe, you know, if you ask me. Former player, you're just extremely pissed off and angry about the whole thing. Because it should never happen, right? We should be one of the best four countries in Central and South America. And the fact that we didn't qualify is a big problem. And I think it kind of shed light on a lot of the problems that we have. And a lot of it is it's expensive to play soccer. There's a pay-to-play, right? If you don't have $2,500, you're not on a travel team or on one of the better teams. And that's a big problem. That's something that, because we didn't qualify, really, you know, focused on. And you look at it, there's, you know, you look at some of these best players from around the world, they come from kind of almost nothing, right? They come from nothing.
Yeah.
And they're really fighting to make it. I mean, you see in some of the other professional sports, football, basketball, you kind of see that here. And those guys, that's their only way to get out of their economic situation. And so they have, to me, they have a little bit of a motivation that gives it an edge over the families that have the money to you know, because it's not life or death for them a lot of times. And I think there's a big shift. And so there was a big election for the president of U.S. Soccer this year, which I was on a committee. And, you know, U.S. Soccer was a small organization, you know, 10, 15 years ago, right? But now, I mean, they have $150 million in the bank. You know, they operate on a $100 million a year budget. And U.S. soccer hasn't grown to reflect that. The staffing is all understaffed and things like that. So now the fact that we didn't qualify puts this big spotlight on what's going wrong. And we elected a new president, and hopefully, you know, he can help institute that structure that's needed to make better things happen. And one of the things about the U.S., it's so spread out. It's so big.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you talk about Europe and all these things, but, you know, there's all of Europe is kind of like the United States, to be honest, right? So when it comes to it. So there's so many different ideas and things, but it's how do we pull all that together? How do we, you know, make it cheaper? How do we get kids? And one of the things is that the MLS, every team now has a pathway to get to the pros. They have from a U10 team all the way up to the first team, where they have a second team, you know, a third team. And we didn't have that before. And that's what Europe has now. And so now all the MLS teams have that. Just within the past 5 years is probably what we've had. So I think you'll start seeing a lot of kids getting better at younger ages as we move forward.
Yeah, and you've had a couple guys make the dynamo out of the developmental program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely not as much as we should have, I think. You know, I think we'll be the first to say, we look at our structure and it hasn't been the best, right? We're not getting all the best kids out of Houston. We're not developing them and turning them into pros, you know? And so, you know, it's a focus of ours moving forward. We're fourth largest city in the country. We should be able to produce a lot of national team players, and we haven't.
You know, and to that point, you know, I think of cities like Portland and Seattle, and you mentioned Atlanta, who have really done wonders with their MLS franchises. And the, I mean, they're always sold out. Those are smaller cities than Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I almost feel like because Houston had, and, you know, maybe this is being stereotyping a little bit, but because Houston has such a massive Hispanic population, that we should have way more interest than some place like Portland, where there's almost no Hispanics in Portland. I've been there. There's like six.
So here's my take on all of that, right? So Houston, they're not. I mean, a lot of people move to Houston.
Yeah.
Right. And so put it in a different terms. If you're a New Yorker and you're a Yankee fan, you move to Houston, you're not going to turn into an Astros fan.
Right.
Right. Your son's probably, you might go to a few Astros games, you know, you have a better chance of converting their son than you do those. So you have a lot of transplant, you know, Hispanic people, and they follow their leagues, they follow their teams. So it's how do we rope in their kids to come turn them into the Dino fans? Because you're never going to turn their parents. So Houston's such a transient city in that sense. So that's the struggle that we have, right? And I think, you know, we're kind of seeing a little bit of that change. I mean, Astros have been around for 20 years, and then when they were more than that, right? They've been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
So when they were bad for a while, everyone's just like, they don't go. But they start getting good again. Everybody knows about them, and everybody's like, oh, okay. You know, they remember the good times, and so they start coming back out. So I think, you know, it's a matter of time, and it's a matter of maybe we didn't do the right things to target the right markets when we first got here.
Can you hang around for a minute? Because I want to ask you about pitch 25, but we got to go to break here.
No problem.
All right.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. Live from the Hyatt Regency Hotel in the Galleria, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5 and Sportsmap 94.1. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, live here at the Hyatt Regency in the Galleria with Brian Ching, Dynamo legend, Hawaii legend, all-around good dude. I wanted to ask you, because I know you opened up Pitch 25 recently, which I was very excited about because it's about a five-minute walk from my place.
Nice.
I've been by there four times now, and it's been so completely packed that I haven't been able to get in. So I guess that's a good problem for you.
We'll definitely get you in there. Just let me know next time. But, the cool thing about it and what the World Cup really brought out was the diversity of this city. I mean, for the Colombia games, we were full of Colombians. The Mexican games, full of Mexicans. The French game, full of French, you know, and Croatia, same thing. And it's been pretty amazing to kind of see everybody kind of come and celebrating soccer. And, It is a big space. So
yeah, it's big.
It's 25,000 square feet. We got a beer garden outside. We got, you know, the sports bar on the inside. You know, obviously for the World Cup, we've been just all soccer. But, you know, we're definitely looking forward to the Astros crowd coming in, the Texans fans coming in, because we think we built something that's pretty unique. And it's for everybody. It's not just soccer fans. It's definitely for the sports fans and the people that want to enjoy sports. And if you don't, then we have a beer garden outside with great beers and, you know, a beautiful scenery out there.
And the location's great, man, because you're right in the middle of all, like, Truck Yard just opened down there and all those places. I mean, you're in a really good spot.
Yeah, I mean, Edo is totally transforming. You know, I think it started with Dynamo Stadium 5-6 years ago, and now it's just kind of culminating into a lot more businesses popping up down there. And, you know, it's fun to see, fun to be a part of, and definitely you know, a lot of good places to kind of go and have a few beers.
Yeah, it is amazing that it really did start with BBVA Compass, and now I almost never leave down there. I live downtown. I'd go all over downtown. I don't even cross 59 anymore. It's like the wall. There's so many cool places right along there. And
it used to be a wall in a negative way. Right. Nobody would cross over.
Exactly.
But now, you know, it's going to be really cool. You know, I'd love to see it kind of that area kind of develop into almost, I wouldn't say a sixth street like Austin, but sort of like that, like an area where people can go, they close off streets at night. You know, lots of different options to kind of go and hang out and have fun at.
How much do you think that the freeway changing, basically St. Emmanuel over there, the other side from where you guys are, how much is that going to affect that area? Because I think all of that stuff on that side has to move.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be cool when they're done. I think the construction process is going to be a nightmare. But having said that, their plan is to have a park. So literally on that, where Pitch 25 is, anything closer to the convention center is going to be torn down and become an outdoor park, kind of just like Discovery Green on the other side. They're going to have a park. So, you know, I'm talking to some people at Houston First, and, you know, part of their bid for the 2026 World Cup was that's going to be a park, and that would be the location where they throw all the watch parties and stuff, which would be really cool for Pitch 45.
Good news for you.
There, but,
yeah, going to make that investment look real good.
But I don't know if that's going to happen in 8 years, 9 years. But yeah, I think that's the long-term plan. I think that, you know, once they start that, I think it's going to be, or once they're done with that, I think it's going to be totally transform Edo into a really, really cool place to be hanging out at.
I'm going to wait till the World Cup's over before I come by, but I am looking forward to getting in there. I'm just an old. I don't like
he's
big
trying
crowds.
He's trying to help you out during the slow season.
Yeah, when things slow down, I'll be there for sure. But no, that's pretty cool. So what do you think about this World Cup final? I mean, obviously a little bit of a surprise with Croatia and maybe France too, but how do you think it's going to play out?
I totally think it's a surprise World Cup, and that are so many upsets that went on. And, you know, I think one of the things that it shows is that, you know, the dominant teams aren't so dominant anymore. You know, everyone's kind of catching up, and there are a lot of great teams, a lot of good players. I mean, look at Iceland. I just looked at their population, like 300,000, 400,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually qualified in one of the hardest regions to qualify for the World Cup, which is unbelievable. And I want to see a new team win it. I want to see Croatia win it. I think it would be an amazing story, them winning the World Cup. You know, I think France will probably win. I think they're the more dynamic team. But you can't count Croatia out the way they came back against England. So I'm rooting for Croatia. I think France might win, though.
How did you decide at the beginning of the World Cup, once the U.S. was not qualified? Who were you cheering for? Who did you want to win?
From a business standpoint, or from a
from a business standpoint, that's pretty.
Yeah, that's a pretty obvious one. But I just mean you personally as a soccer fan. Is there a certain country you're like, man, it'd be really cool to see them get it?
Yeah, it was more for an individual player like Messi. I always admired him as a player, and I thought, hey, look, it'd be cool to see him kind of win a World Cup and kind of solidify just any doubt that he was one of the best players ever to put laces on. And so I was rooting for them. They went out early, and then I was kind of rooting for Belgium, and then they went out. And so I'm not good at picking this World Cup winner thing.
If France wins, I win a big pool. So
nice.
And I know nothing about soccer.
It is funny that, like, Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, those guys, it seems like for the last 15 years have been considered 1 and 1A as like the best players in the world, and neither one of them have even really come that close, have they?
Well, it shows you just come, you know, how much of a team sport that soccer is. I mean, you have 11 guys out there, you know.
It's
one guy, even if he is the best guy in the world, is not going to, you know, make that much of a – he'll make a difference, but he's not going to make that much of a difference. I mean, you look at Ronaldo, he pretty much got them out of the group stage and then, you know, couldn't carry him any further. Yeah. But also one of the things about the World Cup, too, is these guys, some of these top guys like Messi and Ronaldo, they play 60 games, 50 games a year, and then they – put the World Cup on top of that. I mean, these guys got to be exhausted, you know, to when it comes to the World Cup time.
Well, and the pressure in those games on guys like that just has to be. I mean, I know you know a little bit about that. Yeah. I mean, World Cup is just a totally different thing as far as pressure goes, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you see some of those goalkeepers made some pretty bad mistakes. Even one of the best goalkeepers in the world, Sir Spain, kind of let the ball kind of go right through his hands and stuff. So the pressure does get the players, even though these guys and a lot of these guys play with the pressure week in and week out, but you know the World Cup is a different beast, and the fact that it's every 4 years, and you know it's not a guarantee that you even be in the World Cup, you know, like the U.S.
Well, hopefully in 4 years we're not talking about that again.
No, I'm pretty sure we won't be. But yeah, like you said, the funny thing is Mexico was in the same situation that we were 4 years ago, in the sense that they needed results to go their way on the last day to actually get into the World Cup. And, you know, we ended up winning our game, which kind of got Mexico in to the World Cup. And then everything went wrong. I think there were 12 different scenarios and 11 of which, if they happened, we would have been in the World Cup. And obviously the one that didn't happen, we're out of the World Cup with the U.S. So
how bizarre was that watching that? Because basically until halftime, it's fine. They're in, no problem. And then all of a sudden, every little thing that had to happen starts happening.
Yeah, you're just frustrated that, you know, as a former player, you're angry. You know, you're just angry that we're even in this mess to begin with. And then, you know, you just kind of, you just in disbelief in a lot of ways because you just expected to qualify and not even be a question. And so, you know, still, you know, hurts just talking about it.
It bothers Glenn still, too, because he didn't get to go to Russia either.
All right, that's Brian Ching, Dynamo legend. And go by and check out Pitch 25 in Edo, a very good addition to the area down there. And I will be in there very soon for sure.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, guys.
All right. We are going to take a little break.
How did I do? Did I fool him into thinking I knew anything about soccer?
You know, I was impressed. Yeah, you asked some really good soccer. Did you Google those?
Of course. What are you talking about? All right, I knew who Cristiano Ronaldo was before 10 minutes ago? No, I had no idea.
No, you know he's the one that has all the hot girlfriends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen that.
All right, we'll be right back. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Separated. Hey! Now you're talking back to me. You gotta keep them separated.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. Live from the Hyatt Regency Hotel in the Galleria, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, live here at the Hyatt Regency in the Galleria. And I just got a notice on my AccuWeather thing.
Okay.
And apparently we're in a thunderstorm. It says rain for at least 120 minutes, but then I look outside and I don't see any rain.
It's super rainy.
It's a little windy and dark, but apparently rain for at least 120 minutes. Hey, quick plug for sportsmap.com. If you get a chance, check it out. Terrific website. And I say that.
Tremendous website. Tremendous.
It's the best. We only have the best people. And now we've got some great stuff on there. And a lot of talented people doing videos now. A lot of really good commentary. I mean, it's just got a little bit of everything. AJ will be up tomorrow. What do you got tomorrow?
I haven't decided yet.
Oh, okay.
I'll work on that. I figure I can at least do that because I'm not working tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Who's filling in? John?
Oh, I am.
Oh, cool. That'll be fun. Awesome. We might have to get drunk.
Good idea.
That'd be a fun show. Hey, before we get to the gym of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I made a mistake trying to cram food in on breaks there.
Yeah.
Jeff Platt tweeted out, Caesars books have taken major action on Joe Catta to win the main. Odds have moved from plus 700 to plus 450. Approval now required on all Catta bets.
Wow.
For a guy with, you know, one, like there's two guys that have almost 67% or more than 67% of the chips in play or right around that.
Well,
and he's not one of them, so that tells you something.
But he's probably the best player at the table.
Man, I don't know. I tell you what, there's four or five guys. I mean, what he's accomplished is amazing, but there's four or five guys at this table who are really, really good. And but yeah, four and a half to one seems a little light to me. I'd like a little better price on him than that. All right, you know what? I may look up online. I may get a little action tonight.
Okay.
All right, let's do the Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The gem of the day. It's the gem of the day. The Zadok Jeweler Gem of the Day.
I've got two really good ones that Zachary, who's a listener, emailed me today.
All right.
And they're both so good, I wasn't sure which one to go with. So I'm just going to do them both.
Okay.
Because that's what we do. And the first one is a Florida story.
Love those.
A homeless Florida man with no arms has been charged with stabbing a Chicago tourist.
Now, that's a challenge.
Miami Beach police say 46-year-old Jonathan Crenshaw held a pair of scissors with his feet and stabbed 22-year-old Cesar Coronado just after midnight Tuesday.
Was he sitting down?
Apparently, he's a popular fixture in the area known for painting on canvases.
With his feet?
With his feet, along a trendy spot in South Beach. Apparently, he was lying down when Coronado approached him and kicked him in the head. Police say Crenshaw stabbed Coronado twice and fled the scene.
He fled the scene?
Well, he's got legs, he just doesn't have arms. You could flee the scene with legs.
Yeah, I guess so.
But a friend who was traveling with Coronado's...
I'm guessing he had to drop the weapon to flee.
Well, yeah. You can't run with... No one wants to run with scissors.
Running with scissors in your hands is considered dangerous.
Yeah, running with scissors in your feet, you could lose a toe.
Right.
So he's been charged with aggravated battery.
But wait, he got kicked in the head, right?
Well, the friend said that they asked him for directions when he suddenly jumped up and stabbed Coronado in the arm. So I'm not sure here.
It's one of those tough
calls. It's going to have to play out in the courts.
Yeah. I got to think that the guy who got stabbed has the upper hand in the...
upper foot? don't know. No, I'm not. I know where this is going if I keep going with this. Give that man a hand. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Dangerous. Yeah.
If you're stabby and you know it, clap your hands.
Yeah, stab. All right, here's the other one. This is kind of funny. Have you done any of these escape room things?
No.
They're a lot of fun, actually, if you do them with the right people.
Who are those?
Like
friends?
I did it with my kids once. That was fun.
It'll be a struggle for me.
Well, okay. I did it with my kids once. It was fun.
Okay.
And then I did it with some friends once, and it was fun. But I'm two for two on getting out of the room, so I don't know that I want to do any more. Because the one time the wife did it without me, they sucked. So I kind of feel like I'm the reason that we got out of the room both times.
Yeah.
Even though I had nothing to do with it, very little. But police say a burglar in Washington State broke into an escape room and ironically couldn't get out.
Oh, no.
Apparently, this
is embarrassing.
Escape Experience is an entertainment center in Washington. And basically, you find clues, solve puzzles. This guy could not get out and actually had to call 911 to help free him.
Oh, boy.
He broke into the business early on July 8th. Sheriff said he had a burrito and he was settling in to have breakfast and a beer, and I guess he got scared because he couldn't get out.
Oh.
Reportedly broke in through the back door, but couldn't remember where the other door was and decided to call for help. before the police could free him, he did manage to get out. However, he was still lurking around the strip mall when they found him, arrested on second-degree burglary charges after officers reportedly found evidence linking him to the break-in.
Yeah.
The guy who owns it said, "I'm proud to say I'm the only escape room in the Northwest that has a 100% capture rate of criminals." It's a good selling point.
That is good.
So those are your Zadok Jewelers gems of the day.
The gem of the day. It's the gem of the day. The Zadok Jeweler gem of the day.
All right, guys, let me tell you about Man Centers, now known as the Y Factor, presented by Man Centers. If you are dealing with low testosterone, it can affect you in a lot of ways. Low energy, low sex drive, harder to get weight off. And a lot of places will say, hey, get on these testosterone injections, this synthetic testosterone. And it might make you feel better for a short while, but then you're going to crash. The other thing about that synthetic testosterone is it can damage your fertility long term. It can cause dependency. And it can cause shrinkage, and you don't want shrinkage. Nobody does. Man Centers, they're focusing on your body's natural ability to produce its own testosterone. They've got three locations in Houston at Katy Freeway and Campbell in the Memorial area, off 249 in Tomball, and now open in Webster. Go in, get yourself a free general male wellness checkup. Check your levels, see how everything's working down there for you. And it doesn't cost you a thing. You can't beat that. There's no excuses, guys. Give them a call to set up an appointment, 832-358-8600, or go to mancenters.com to book your appointment online. The Y Factor, presented by Man Centers, helping men lead better, more fulfilling lives. Down and-